We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello. Welcome back. Welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. The final episode for this shit show, the year that was 2020, or as history will know it, the year without pants. I am your host, and man, hoping to never have to refer to being pantsless at work again. That joke is done, guys. We are done with it. Matt Harvey. And this is another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. Now, just before we get into it, a couple of things coming up for 2021. For those of you in the UK, I know you're doing it rough at the moment. I do have my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, on the Leicester Comedy Festival Digital Fringe website. It won't be till February, but tickets are available now if you're looking forward to something to check out, something different to do. You know, because you'll be sitting in your house anyway, more than likely, but at least this will be something that you can watch that won't ruin your Netflix algorithm. And for those of you in Australia, the touring and festival season is starting again, and I'll be starting next year with the Adelaide Fringe Festival with a live in-person show in front of people, in front of a crowd with strangers. And I'm not going to lie, if I'm not feeling a little bit apprehensive and mostly excited about the idea of getting up and performing for some people. And hopefully by then things are looking a little bit better here. But we'll see how we go. Those dates, they're all on the Fringe Festival website. I think I'm starting on the 19th of February. I've got two episodes of the Weird News Quiz, which if you want to check out to see if it's worth your time, go back just a couple of episodes before this and you'll see there was two that were part of the Melbourne Fringe Festival with some amazing guests and some incredible times. They weren't quite ramble on as long as those ones did, but they're going to be a good time. And I've got, I think it's five? I'm going to say five. Five live shows of what will be the final tour and the final time you guys, well, this touring festival will be the final tour and the final time you guys ever have to hear this title again, my live storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, which does feature four stories. Same along with me, a monkey bite, a long bus trip across America, an arrest, and a mugging. I really look forward to performing it for you guys and seeing your smiling faces and hearing your laughter in person. But for now, let's get into it. Let's get to the news. Here are some headlines. Dr. Fauci has made the claim that notorious jolly home invader Santa Claus is immune to the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a complicated announcement because it means Santa has had the secret to saving humanity all along, but kept it to himself, putting him firmly on the naughty list. But not only is this behaviour selfish, it will cause confusion for the poor kids who now think that the stinky guy dressed as Santa in the shop will not infect them, and the last thing America needs is more people violating COVID protection measures. Meanwhile, here in Australia, Acting ACT Chief Health Officer Dr. Vanessa Johnson is pleased to announce that Santa Claus and the North Pole support crew have received an exemption to enter the ACT without undergoing quarantine, which implies that he would need to quarantine, but wouldn't be. Guys, we don't need a third quarantine-breaching scandal. Though, I would be keen to see how much the Murdoch press would find a way to blame Dictator Dan for this breach. According to the announcement, Santa has advised ACT Health that the naughty list is at a record low in Canberra, a huge surprise to all of us in the rest of Australia, or at least it was a huge surprise for us until we remembered that Kirribilli House is actually located in New South Wales, not in Canberra. Someone at ACT Health is on a bit of a roll, to be honest, as acting ACT Chief Health Officer Dr. Vanessa Johnson has also provided the following reasons for the Grinch's refusal into the Australian Capital Territory. So this is part of a rhyme that was written. I have grounds to suspect with quarantine you won't abide, which risks undoing our good work. We just moved to 2-in-1 inside. Christmas is almost here, and we don't want you to ruin the festive season. As ACT Chief Health Officer, I refuse you entry for this reason. You'll be denied entry should you arrive on our shore. Be advised, we're informed, ACT policing, just to be sure. This public health emergency direction we do sign. Non-compliance is an offence for which you would face a big fine. Your dog Max is a good dog. To him, this direction does not apply. With Santa and his reindeer, Max is permitted to fly. Pauline Hanson is already drafting a request to have this replaced as the official Australian anthem. The weird part is she's got this all backwards. Santa enters everybody's house and is a definite quarantine and social distancing risk. Whereas the Grinch, all he wants to do is stay isolated and alone at the top of his mountain. Just don't sing any Christmas carols and we'll be fine. After word that a comet was coming close to Earth, Oreo proceeded to build a giant PR stunt. A giant vault in Norway to protect their cookies from an asteroid that never really posed a threat to the Earth. The vault creators left specific instructions about how the vault should be accessed.
Oreo, first you twist it, then you lick it, then you dunk it.
The vault is for use in emergencies only, so an Oreo spokesperson has said access is forbidden until it is undeniable that the Earth is double stuffed. The good thing is, it's in Norway, so we'll have easy access to the Seed Vault and the Disney Vault. That's where they keep Walt's head. Breakdancing has been confirmed for the 2024 Olympics. This is a pretty upbeat choice for France. I would expect them to have added miming existential philosophy to the Olympics before breakdancing. The good thing is, this opens the floodgates for other types of dancing, so expect a big push for Morris dancing at the Seoul Olympics in 2028. Ivanka Trump credits herself with feeding the hungry after the Trump administration tried to kick 700,000 people off food stamps. I'm inclined to believe her. You see, you give a man food stamps and he will eat poorly for a day. You teach a man to scavenge and he will guide the revolution in the apocalypse. We are just preparing this group to be the most valuable people when the world becomes the hellscape promised by George Miller's masterpiece, Babe 2, Pig in the City. New Zealand, or Australia's friend telling it to calm down before they get dragged into something, is attempting a rather aggressive rebranding. With its head of tourism, Stuart Nash, targeting backpackers, New Zealand's number one source of anger to later inspire the haka. After all, there's not much else there to get angry about. This comes after the head of tourism said, I will ban the leasing or hiring out of vans to tourists that aren't self-contained, as he's sick of tourists shitting in our waterways. After all, if they keep doing that, where will Gollum catch his fish? Guys, you need to consider the locals when you travel. Nash went on to say, if you're willing to pay for a camper van, at least you have the ability to dispose of your excrement in a way that meets our sustainability goals, and quite frankly, our brand. Presumably that brand being New Zealand. We won't take your shit. Scott Morrison has been forced to walk back comments made in Parliament regarding his political party. He said, on this side, if you're good, you get a job. Now, this does go away to explain why Peter Dutton is not the PM, but it does fail to account for how Morrison got the job. According to BuzzFeed News, ICE investigators have issued a subpoena demanding BuzzFeed News identify some of its sources. In a strongly worded response, BuzzFeed said, "We won't be revealing our top sources, but you won't believe who number four is." Rapper, businessman, and former drug dealer Jay-Z has started a new business venture. He's a drug dealer, starting his new marijuana business, Monogram. He looks forward to nobody using his premium service so that he can write off all the drugs as a tax loss. And you can look forward to hearing about it on his next album, The Black Chronic 2, The Producers. After an antitrust lawsuit sparked by behaviors like Google paying Apple billions a year to be the default search engine on iPhones, Apple is looking to distance itself from any close internal scrutiny. Because who needs a deep probing after the year that we've had, eh? If you'd like to know more about the success of people trying to outdo Google as a search engine, you can just Bing it. In an effort to dismiss a lawsuit, a corporation who has a higher number of COVID-infected workers than it has dollars paid in tax, Amazon, claims when you purchase a TV show or a movie on Amazon Prime Video, you don't actually own it. This is all just the flagship product of Amazon's latest subsidiary, Amazon. The minimalist arm of the corporate giant wants you to question the nature of your relationship to things, be happy to pay for things without needing to possess them, you selfish prick. How else will we save the planet if you selfishly insist on owning things that you've paid for? What even is ownership, except the impulse to possess items that will tie you to this materialist plane, forcing you to reappear in the cycle of samsara and be forced to live another lifetime under the oppressive boot of capitalism? Just give it all away. Imagine, no possessions. It's easy if you shop with Amazon. A climate change commitment from the ANZ to halt lending to its largest customers unless the business can prove carbon transition plans by next year has been cautiously welcomed by conservationists, but has enraged some senior Nationals MPs. I mean, come on, this is the thing that sets you off, not the laundered money or anything else. This. You're supposed to be the party of the farmers. You're supposed to be the farmers' party. Farmers need an environment to farm in. You can't grow all your crops in a backyard bunker of manure and potatoes. There is only so much Matt Damon behaviour that we can endure as a species.
Today, five former prime ministers are banding together, vowing to receive the COVID vaccine.
Very clever, former PMs. You're no longer a priority, except as a brave example for others. Good hustle. Very good hustle. I respect the game. I would like to formally announce that I am also willing to get the vaccine publicly as an example for all redheads, all white men, and all people named Matt to show them that it is safe. Line me up. So which former PMs are getting the shot? Let's have a little look here.
John Howard is leading the charge.
Wait a minute now. John Howard is in his 80s, so he'd likely get it early anyway. But he has screwed over millions of Australians in his time as PM. Then again, he did the guns thing. Alright, you get a pass, but only because of the guns.
Julia Gillard?
Let's see, Julia Gillard. People might not like her, but she didn't actively hurt anyone. So alright, go ahead, you get a pass too.
Join Kevin Rudd, Malcolm Turnbull.
Well, they are attempting to bring the Murdoch Empire into the spotlight as the parasites that they are. So, alright, we'll give them a pass.
And Tony Abbott.
Abbott? For starters, he works in the UK now. The UK can give him his publicity stunt. Nobody respects you enough to see this as an action worth following. If anything, you'll put a worse stank on the vaccine than any anti-vaxxers could ever do. But even the ones who I think would set a good example, or at least a half-passable example, they should then take this as a precedent for future behaviours, seeing as they're all still on a taxpayer salary. If we're going to be introducing new measures, then all the former PMs must also be beholden to the conditions of whatever new measures we introduce. Cashless welfare cards? Cool. Former PMs can trial it for a year before we force it on the public. Robo-debt? No worries. Let's go back over your spending, your government spending, and apply these measures to them, and let's see what we can get back first. Cuts to job seeker? No worries. All former PMs will live on that amount for a year before we roll it out to the public. Then, and only then, they've earned their queue jumping on vaccines. In fact, they might even have to participate in the development process just to have the money to feed their families. We're always looking for healthy volunteers. Australian coal has been blocked indefinitely by Beijing as China continues to punish Australia economically for its push for a coronavirus inquiry and criticism of China's national security legislation and human rights records. Australia criticizing another country on its human rights records is like the pot calling the kettle black and then locking it up for being a refugee while being black. Maybe now that Beijing, the second largest importer of Australian coal, is no longer buying from Australia, it's time to consider investing in new forms of power production. Options the government might consider, before solar of course, because we're never going to do that. Converting manure into a power source. Using giant hamster wheels to battle obesity as well as generate jobs and power. And of course, putting backpackers into 3 months of battery service as they lay in a goop-filled tube generating electricity from their body heat in order to obtain their elusive second-year visa. Conspiracy theorists, get your best tin foil and stock up on your silkiest red string. Turns out, one of the long-term health impacts of the COVID-19 is erectile dysfunction. Currently, experts are confused as to how the two are connected, but I have already drawn the connective sinews of this conspiracy. Follow the money, baby. Pfizer, the creators of the vaccine currently being used, are also the creators of the popular little blue pill, Viagra. Bill Gates doesn't want to microchip you. Pfizer just wants to damage your ding-dong unless you take their vaccine. Or, if it's too late for you, they also have the solution to all your ding-dong problems. Now, let's get on to larger news. UK lockdown news. As the UK prepares to receive its first vaccine, there's still a lot of anticipation over the order of receiving the vaccine, with the first recipients set to be frontline workers and people over 80. This leaves a lot of people still vulnerable and presumably still in lockdown. How do we keep them patiently waiting? Well, there's been a lot of talk about the effectiveness of the lockdown decision and what measures can be implemented to make the lockdown more effective. A new paper by research group SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, which, if I am being honest, sounds like they worked hard to make that acronym work. But this new paper suggests that young people told to isolate due to the coronavirus should be offered free gaming. An idea so simple that Victorians leaving lockdown are considering a trip to the UK. The new SAGE paper warns compliance with COVID-19 restrictions is substantially lower and declining among people aged 18 to 29 compared to older age groups. Though they have a strong motivation to adhere, this is undermined by a lack of trust in government and a lack of clear information. I can't think of where they would get this lack of trust from, but hey, this is the world we live in. In order to combat this, the paper recommends young people who are asked to isolate or stay at home should be given good financial and other support, such as free mobile phone data, streaming, and gaming. The reasoning is that young people are more oriented towards immediate experiences and rewards rather than long-term consequences, possibly a side effect of growing up being told that their world will end within their lifetimes. Or maybe it's because they spend so much money on avocado toast. Sure, the two don't correlate, but neither does anything else that they blame avocado toast on. This is similar to the service that was initially offered to the occupants of the Ruby Princess, where they were offered free access to cam girl videos as motivation to stay on board the SS Nurgle. This is reminiscent of the musicians who kept playing while the Titanic sank, as these passengers continued to fiddle while everything around them failed. This is one of four recommendations in a paper called Increasing Adherence to COVID-19 Preventative Behaviours Among Young People by the Scientific Pandemic Influenza Group on Behaviours. This was considered by SAGE on the 22nd of October, 9 days before the Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced the 4-week lockdown for England, but it was only published for the first time a little while back. The paper does not go into detail on what this free gaming would involve, or how it would be distributed to the young people, though if it's anything like lunch meals, it'll be waggled in front of them for long enough for them to get reliant on it, only for it to then be taken away. Moving on, train news now, to Melbourne, the generally quite nerdy child who has really been acting out recently. Signs of bad behaviour of including hiding in its room, mild flirtation with Decatur ships, and some mild corruption. As a cleaning company paid $1.3 million a month, or roughly 1/30th of an airport land deal a month, to sanitise trains, cut corners, while allegedly paying off public officials, potentially exposing Melbourne commuters to coronavirus at the height of the pandemic. It's pretty amazing that this has been kept on the down low, to be honest. Given the near media blackout, I'm starting to reconsider these accusations of living in a dictatorship. But hey, the question is, what are they covering up? Well, allegations were heard by an independent board-based anti-corruption commission inquiry into alleged serious corruption inside Melbourne's railways. And not your standard railway corruption like bank robbers on horses or tying maidens to the tracks. No, no, no. This is a much less cinematic corruption. Testimony was heard that V-Line chief executive and man who looks exactly like a man who would be caught stealing government money, James Pinder, pocketed monthly payments from cleaning company TransClean, along with $320,000 in funds which were spent on his $2.5 million home. The board of Victoria's regional rail operator V-Line has sacked Pinder, and Metro Trains has sacked its operational fleet manager, and your boss coming back on the first day after his much needed holiday, Peter Bolas. After the inquiry heard, the pair saw the pandemic as an opportunity to make some money. Hey baby, it's pandemic. It's basically the purge for financial crime. Isn't that right, Bezos? Oh, and don't think we've forgotten about you, Jerry Harvey. The men devised a plan to be paid $50,000 in bonuses by TransClean. In addition, Bolas and Pinder were accepting monthly payments of between $8,000 and $10,000, with Bolas pocketing up to $150,000 in exchange for promoting TransClean's interest at Metro. Those interests mostly include covering up a worker's death and injuries, including a TransClean cleaner who fell under a train in Cheltenham, while a separate incident saw a cleaner nearly electrocuted, covering up safety breaches, pretending to be gangsters, and not understanding how to hide a conspiracy. It's a mixed bag of interests, to be sure, but you don't want to be the person at the party who can only talk about one subject ad nauseum. All this occurred even though Bolas knew as early as April that TransClean was failing to disinfect the trains during the pandemic, which carried many essential workers. And that was just during the pandemic, but they'd been covering up these mistakes for more than 3 years, even tipping off the company about an upcoming surprise audit, fundamentally undermining the most important element, that is, the element of surprise, and then arranged for problematic documents to be removed. Those documents not only showed the corrupt behaviour, but photos were found of the documents in question in blackface when they were younger, which is very problematic. Taxpayers paid TransClean $1.3 million a month for extra COVID-19 cleaning on suburban trains, on top of the company's contract worth up to $40 million at V-Line and $5 million at Metro. Bolas told TransClean's boss to make up a name of a cleaning chemical that he would use during the COVID-19 pandemic, saying, "Make shit up, George, yeah?" Which, for $1.3 million a month, is the only time an improviser has ever been paid. So, alright. Give me a location, and a deadly disease. Come on. Bolas said he had a meeting and he needed the name of a chemical that would be used, as no one here has got no fucking idea, and they're ringing me to ring you. We need a chemical name, so find out what the spray is. Suggesting Mortine and Glen 20 on various occasions. So on the plus side, the trains are currently free from the menace of Louis the Fly. Or at least we think so, because remember, Louis the Fly always seems to escape at the end of the ad. At least there is a better chance of being rid of flies, because they certainly won't be free of COVID, as it was revealed on the call played at IBAC that Bolas talked about a commuter suspected to be COVID positive who rode the trains for 2 weeks. And yet still, no reporting from Murdoch news outlets appropriately pointing out the horrid behaviour. Seems they're all tuckered out after their big tantrum about Dan Andrews and they need to have a little nappy wap. TransClean's boss, George Haratos, admitted in intercepted phone conversations with Bolas, which were played at the hearings, that the cleaning on Metro's train was deficient. Where Bolas got to do the one thing we'd all like to do to Haratos. Yell at him in a befuddled anger. He yelled, "The state is paying you more now to do more work which you're not doing. They didn't even fucking spray the train." George Haratos had the audacity to front the hearings where he admitted to having a strong friendship with Mr. Pinder, whom he paid cash, which he claimed was the winnings of successful horse racing bets. Haratos claimed he bet money from a shared kitty with Mr. Pinder, winning about 2 quadrillas a month, and handing the proceeds to Mr. Pinder in cash. A pretty incredible claim, given on a typical weekend, barring scratches, there are approximately 30,000 to 50,000 possible winning combinations. Now, if, like me, you need a primer on why this is an outrageous claim, well, here is the example given by VillageBet. On the weekend of the 25th of May, 2019, the quadrilla legs at Randwick had 15, 13, 13, and 17 runners, respectively, after scratchings. The chances, therefore, of selecting the quadrilla with a single combination were 1 in 15 times 13 times 13 times 17, equaling 43,095. That's a 1 in 43,095 chance that you have the correct numbers. Here's another example. At Flemington, the chances were 1 in 14 times 10 times 18 times 15, coming to 37,800. A 1 in 37,800 chance of selecting the correct numbers, making the regular odds of success about 40,000 to 1, which supposedly they were nailing 2 times a month every month. And if they could do this every month, why do they even have jobs? Just go on the professional gambling circuit. Would save you a lot of trouble with corruption charges. Pindar also claimed the money he received from Haritos was linked to a gambling syndicate with Haritos and Wallace. Pindar did admit he received cash from Haritos on at least one occasion, the day that he was caught by IBAC with $10,000 stuffed in an envelope hidden behind his door, insisting it was from the aforementioned syndicate. Unsurprisingly, the investigators did not take him at his word, seizing the burner phone and the $10,000 in cash given to him by Haritos. And they might have gotten away with it too, but Bolas has blown up the spot, denying knowing this syndicate exists and confessing that he was paid in exchange for furthering TransClean's business interests. Now, where does that take us? Well, a current affair has gotten its hands on the story. And as atrocious as the behaviour of these corrupt heads of service are, what ACA are trying to get away with is even worse. Have a listen to this.
He always calls it a sprinkle, don't he?
So this turn of phrase is, to them, the centre of the story.
He's the CEO caught taking a sprinkle. Or was that hundreds and thousands?
Hundreds and thousands are named that because of the seemingly uncountable nature of the small candies. And why, okay, repeat, why are you obsessing on this? Even showing up at his house with a packet of donuts.
Tried one last time with some incentives.
We anticipated you might give us donuts, so we brought some donuts. And these will be your favourite because they've got sprinkles on them.
And aside from the obsession with donuts in this report, they then reported on their website that the sack boss of Victoria's regional rail operator has declined to apologise to taxpayers after a corruption probe. Now, I am not a defender of Pindar. Not at all. He's done terrible things. But that is not at all what he said. Literally, all he has said is that he is not allowed to talk about it. Literally, he says, I'm not allowed to talk to anybody. You can see it in the footage right here.
There's maybe an apology you'd like to express?
I just can't talk to you guys.
Though, he did say,
I'm off to see the doctor. I'm not allowed to talk to anybody. If I talk to you, I'll be breaking the law.
Oh, now you're concerned with breaking the law? Seems a little late for that. But to be fair, the tolerable allowance for late arrivals to understanding the law when running a train network is roughly 80.6%, although they apparently thrive for 82%. New year, new government news now. Minister for Government Services and the only minister I would genuinely believe is a lizard in a man suit, Stuart Robert, has revealed a second beta of MyGov's replacement should be rolled out by the end of 2020. Because the government's feeling all in a rut and wants to shake things up before the new year. New year, new LMP. This new MyGov will include the integration of a digital identity service. So if you are unsure, here is an extremely reassuring ad that they put together.
It's like having 100 points of ID on your phone. You can use MyGov ID when you want and where you want.
So presumably, this doesn't take into account my desire to never use it, and never use it not anywhere. So what else have you got to say?
To protect your identity and stop fraud, the app uses the security features in your device, like your fingerprint or face recognition.
Now, come on guys, you cannot fool me by using the old, "Oh well, you're already using these features, what's the difference?" Two things. I don't use these features. Not out of mistrust. I've just rigged up my old Nokia 3310 to be compatible with digital networks. Nothing can stop the 3310. But also, as untrustworthy as tech companies are, they are infinitely more trustworthy than this team photo. Look at them. This is a photo that can best be described as the entire collection who still think saying the Facebooks is hilarious. So what else should we be worried about?
Firstly, download the MyGovID app.
Alright, let me stop you there. The last app that you created, the COVIDSafe app, was instrumental in finding all of 20 of these COVID cases. And as we all know, we were very lucky here in Australia to only have 20 cases. Oh, hang on, what's that? I'm just receiving word that we had much more than that. Oh, wow, sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't hear about them. How many did we have? 28,000? But the app is safe, right? The government didn't take advantage of trying to force everyone to get an app under the premise of keeping them safe from a deadly disease and then use that app to mine their data. They wouldn't do that to us. What's that? The Australian government's Inspector General for the Intelligence Community, which oversees the government's spy and eavesdropping agencies, would never say that the app data was scooped up in the course of lawful collection of other data, or would he attempt to reassure us by explaining that incidental collection is a common term used by spies to describe the data that was not deliberately targeted, but collected as part of a wider collection effort. Because this kind of collection isn't at all accidental, but rather a consequence of when spy agencies tap into the fiber optic cables which carry an enormous fire hose of data, out of control, unable to be separated from the rest, because as we all know...
And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Tubes. With information being forced through them. Tubes full of angry rhetoric and your personal information. Robert said this year, MyGov has played a crucial role by enabling Australians to have a common enemy to distract them from the endlessness of battling their own reflection in intense games of solitaire, because they'll be sitting around waiting for MyGov to come back online after crashing. So what else do we do with this app? Let's get back into it.
Secondly, prove who you are with your email address and identity documents, such as your Australian driver's license, passport, or Medicare card.
So in order for me to avoid having to use 100 points of ID, all I have to do is upload 100 points of ID to your app, where it will be totally safe from being swept up by enforcement agents or given away by an MP because he thought he was totally allowed to do it, or getting sold on the black market. I mean, the black market is the less dubious version of Amazon, so I guess there is some benefit. Unsurprisingly, Federal Minister for Government Services and heartless narrator of the Greek tragedy known as the Robodebt Scheme, Stuart Robert, is characteristically inappropriately optimistic about the bill. Robert dismissed critics' concerns, saying, "Consent is implied when someone uses a government service. If an Australian wants a service by the government, they obviously have to consent to having that service delivered to them." If they don't want a service from the government, they don't have to. Stuart, mate, can we talk a minute here? Come here. Come close. It's okay. Come here. What are you doing? What's this business about consent, eh? Be it matters of state or matters of love, consent can only ever be implied in a first aid situation when the other person is unconscious. I mean, we shouldn't need to be telling you this, especially you. Have you already forgotten the whole robo-debt thing? Like, I know you weren't punished in any way for that fuck-up, but you should still remember. Let me just refresh your memory. People engaged with a government service who did not consent to having their money illegally seized. It's just this, like, weird quirk that some of us have, like, not having the desire to have our money illegally seized. Now, your approach is what's known as the uncompromising dad approach to governance. Well, mister, by breathing oxygen in my house, you've consented to me being able to sell your stuff without consulting you. Or you can choose not to breathe while living under my roof. The choice is yours, buddy. I imagine that's how he sounds. After its massive payout of $1.2 billion due to illegal seizure of monies from poor people, the government has set out to strike back, like the Empire in the best Star Wars, which also happened to end with the good guys being mostly defeated. And if we're going to do this analogy, probably Lydia Thorpe would be frozen in carbonite. Probably. So we're heading to 2021. Memories of consequences of robo-debt system fading in the minds of our ministers like a bad cheese dream. Sure, it was scary, but there was no long-term consequences. And then they ramp up to introduce tough new targets for Centrelink debt collectors. The way that the guys who run Jurassic Park never really seemed to get the whole containing the dinosaurs and continuing to keep them under control thing, but people still kept showing up to the park. I mean, I suppose by showing up to the park, despite that whole incident in San Francisco, they're just consenting to being eaten by dinosaurs. It's just a consequence of engaging with the system. Documents reveal a panel of new collection agencies must continuously compete to beat rigorous financial targets for recovering money from customers, either winning more work or facing penalties. Which is nice to see that somebody other than job seeker recipients will face penalties. The Australian Unemployed Workers Union spokeswoman, Kristen O'Connell, said she was surprised the department was going to outsource the work. As the government's own documents acknowledge, this outsourcing model means debt collectors have incentives that can result in unintended and perverse behaviour to meet targets and trigger fees. Elsie Klein, who's a senior lecturer in public policy at Australian National University, who has done extensive research on robo-debt and other government collection programs, said there's an almost encouragement that you're seeing there around performance and going after people. When there are performance measures, people cut corners, and that can encourage unscrupulous behaviour because they're trying to maintain a level of performance. I mean, just look at these ticket inspectors here, maintaining performance levels without compromising service.
You just let me go. Wait, I really can't breathe properly.
You stop moving.
You're too close.
Ah, such an inspiration for us all. One thing, though, that welfare recipients can take on board as a reassuring step in these new debt collection agencies is that they will be working hard to maintain their workloads, and whether or not these new external debt collectors break the law will not be weighed in as a factor in winning contracts, as they do not have to obey. And why should they? If they're gonna make it in the cutthroat world of scraping back support systems from the working class, they need to be able to do whatever it takes to ensure that they get their man. How can they compete with all the other entities that are trying to rip off the poor and get unfettered power and control? Let's look at some of their main competitors. In the blue corner, the first and oldest system of systemic oppression of anyone without money. It's your friend, and mine, at least, according to what I was told as a child, with countless deaths swept under the administrative rug and a healthy propping up by alt-right infiltration and fearful suburban families. Don't be fooled by the guns that they got. They're still Jono from the block. It's the police! And in the red corner, pretending to be your salvation while cutting back on contracted positions and lobbying to pay you less and less by the law, and straight up offering you a wage below a living wage, and then threatening you with the possibility of starvation and homelessness if you try to better your situation, underpaying you while never paying any taxes, injuring millions worldwide, and expecting you to show up to work the next day. It's the best form of a welfare. Give it up for capitalism! I mean, people say it's mostly a two-party system, but there's still some room on the ballot for the little guys. And despite all their government backing, these guys are young, scrappy, and ready to throw down. They're just a bunch of Boba Fetts, and at the end of every year, one of them gets blindly knocked into the Sarlacc pit. Better watch out. I look forward to making the whole system affable by creating a faux reality TV show to make you relate to the workers in that position. It will be the breakout Foxtel hit reality show, Wrapped, The Welfare Cheat Hunter. Look out for it, it's coming. Moving on now to punishing the poor news. After a vigorous battle in Parliament and the Senate, it seems the cashless welfare card has failed to be enshrined, but has been put rather on an extended 2-year service to see if we can gather more information about oppressing the poor. The cashless welfare card, otherwise known as the anti-fun card, think about it, trying to feed chocolate to your kids, ooh, bad parent, cut off. I mean, really, this sort of behaviour should be a last resort, a punishment. Sort of like a 3 strokes and you're on the card for a year. Maybe like a licence. Maybe we can get a demerit point system happening where if people show that they are continuously bad with their finances or with their money to a degree that is negligent and detrimental to a family, then we can put them on a system, but also a system whereby they can redeem themselves by gaining those points back. Maybe that'd be a better way for it to work, instead of trying to bully people off of the public welfare that they need. The thing is, they want to have this system in place because it makes them look good, but they don't want to have anyone on it. They sort of want the welfare system to be like nipples on a man, purely ornamental, so that they can say that they have the welfare even though no one's collecting it. And I'm not here to kink shame anybody. Nobody should yuck your yum. I am starting to suspect someone in the Liberal Party has a financial dominance fetish, and that they think that they are helping everyone by allowing them the pure joy that they feel every time someone gives them permission to spend. And if this is your thing, Anne Rustin, that's cool. You do you. But don't make me cosplay as you doing you. I don't want to be you. I have my own intricate fetishes that I'm having to deal with, and it's hard enough without you not allowing me to put money aside to pay for my super elaborate fetish toys. I mean, it's a really small amount per week, and I've earned a little treat by being a good boy and saving my money all year. You see, it's not so fun, is it, when someone forces you to unwillingly be complicit in their thing? Hey, you know what? Maybe I'm going about this all wrong. Maybe I need to adjust my perspective after all. Certainly, this is the right time to do this, to introduce this sort of card, given the influx of new, lazy Australians who are looking to avoid work. So many of them. Look at all these 106 job seekers for every one job. These are outrageous numbers. How will we ever get the system free of these leeches without the incentive of an old-fashioned bullying to get them off the system? You ask any bully, and they will tell you, the system works. I mean, what kind of a world would it be if we didn't put a few of these dorks and nerds in their place? Happy? Maybe. Productive? Not even a little. Bunch of rudderless hippies with no vision. What got human beings to the moon? Being bullied by the Russians. And what sent Elon Musk on a mission to try and drown some Thai boys in a homemade submarine? Being bullied by the internet. All of humanity's best and most reliable, stable examples of humanity have come from bullying. Besides, it's not like University of Melbourne professor Jeff Borland has said that he doesn't see any evidence that the COVID-19 supplement has been a substantial or really any type of major disincentive for people to move into work from unemployment. Surely we would have heard about that. And surely we would have heard if labour market specialist Sue Richardson had said that keeping payments so low that people lost dignity and hope and suffered material deprivation hurt not only the people who were unemployed, but also the thousands of children who grew up in their households. Surely someone would have pointed out that she knew of no evidence that suggested a low rate of job seeker increased the likelihood of an unemployed person getting a job. I cannot imagine that I wouldn't have heard about that. This, my friends, is the post-evidence age. We don't need it anymore. We just say things over and over, and eventually somebody believes them. Which is why the unofficial coalition policy, just between you and me, is to deny that poverty is even a thing. Have a look here.
Senator, the government doesn't have a measure of poverty.
Especially when being pressed by Greens Party member and cool aunt allowing you to have a little smoke at her house, just don't tell your mother, Rachel Seward, who's doing her best impression of a dictionary, banging on and on about definitions, claiming just because you haven't got a definition doesn't mean people aren't living in poverty, blah, 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 blah. But I ask you, Rachel, even if something has a definition, does it exist? Can I even live in it? A unicorn has a definition, but it certainly doesn't exist. But I can find it in a dictionary, and an airless vacuum exists, but I can't live in it.
You're returning to the word poverty again.
Typical Greens member. We've already decided the matter. Let it go. stop banging on about things like climate change, equality, and lifting people out of
poverty.
Besides, no doubt, you can just leave the program, right? Why would they set up a program like this if people couldn't leave? Surely, if you meet the criteria, I mean, come on, there is an exemption for those whose mental or physical health is at risk, and that's understandable. And another exemption, with news listeners would be familiar with, if you can demonstrate reasonable management of your affairs, including finances. So that's pretty reasonable, right? Just like our government, the gold standard of responsible financial behaviour. I mean, look how well they're doing. So well that they can afford to overpay for land by $27 million. That's way more than it's worth. I bet none of these cashless welfare card holders have that kind of money to throw around. Why? Because they're not responsible. What do they even think this money will get them? Happiness? No, certainly not. It's not going to solve their problems to be able to access their finances. Just ask the greatest philosopher of the 20th century, the notorious B.I.G. Look, surely, it's best if they stay poor. Even if we were to permanently double the current JobSeeker yearly sum, this 14,600 totally free, unearned dollars, it wouldn't mean anything. It's not like it'd make them rich. It'd just be more money locked on your cashless welfare card. According to Scott Morrison's definition, you wouldn't even be rich. Being rich isn't even as high as people on $180,000. He says they're not rich. In fact, they're burdened with being job makers and problem solvers. Just ask Barnaby Joyce. He can't even raise an illicit second family on $211,000. And you want more money? Selfish. No, no, no. It will be a much easier life to have what little sum of money you do get paid and just have it locked away where even you, the one who didn't even earn it, just can't access it. Really, it's just safer for everyone. And you, job seeker, you might argue, if all these MPs think it is so manageable to live the high life of a welfare recipient, well, how about we finance the welfare system with the advertising we get from our newest reality show, So You Think You Can Survive on Welfare, where MPs are stripped of assets and forced to pay rent and feed their family, or in some cases families, on the excellent fee of $40 a day. And maybe you think it will be a ratings hit watching them try to figure out the world of
poverty,
if such a thing even exists. But that might feel like you're flogging a dead horse by repeating the reality TV show punchline. And maybe it is. But maybe it's just staying true to the genre. Just keep doing it until it's lost all sense of purpose, all sense of fun, and it's just a pale imitation of itself for fun and profit. But you'd be wrong.
I guess this means more money, more problems for you.
Yeah, I guess so. More money, more problems. It's just the way it is.
Hey, we're coming back to you, Billy.
Thanks, Mace. And I hope you're keeping well there in the past. As for you, dear listener, just keep it simple, hey gang? On to ABC biased news now. Loony leftist opinion factory and national broadcaster the ABC has been accused of another of its outrageous leftist rants, the likes of which have not been seen since Johnson and Friends formed a communist outpost in the Australian outback and attempted to secede from the country, forming the leftist paradise, Marxtopia, which was promptly destroyed by those bully kids Gribble and Tiger from Round the Twist in a scathing act of maintaining the ABC's charter of balance.
Pretty, isn't it? Perfectly balanced, as all things should be.
The comments labelled pro-labour, disgusting, were heard during an ABC election review in 2019. I mean, come on, making pro-labour comments during election coverage makes me sick. The ABC needs to pick up its game. Right, let's break it down. What happened? The impartiality review found during the May 6 episode, the former wife of New South Wales Liberal Premier, a Liberal Party member of more than 50 years, and unmasked Labour spy in a coalition clothing, Catherine Greener, was commenting on Bill Shorten's May 2019 federal election launch and was complimentary about his very strong team. Greener continued to slather her unabashed, biased praise for Labour, saying, "I think the women on that are very credible. Coincidentally, I happened to work for both Chris Bowen and Tanya Plibersek when they were ministers, when I was the chair of the government company. You know, very competent individuals." So there's a competency on both sides. But I think that the Labour Party will win out because they have more women. These comments were seen to be negative for the coalition. And they're right. Like, pointing out that the Labour Party has both women and competent ministers is very negative for the coalition, as they have continuously gone for more of an outy general model of governments rather than the any genital style preferred by women, making it very hard for women to get a position of power. And on top of that, they have shown a preference for a Mr. Magoo-inspired failing your way to the top, where ministers are continuously stumbling from one ministerial profile to another, stumbling blindly into all sorts of capers on the way, accidentally finding themselves stealing taxpayers' money for all sorts of hilarious antics. Hey, maybe you pork barrel an electorate, or find yourself overpaying for a land deal with a mate, or getting fired from a profile for mismanagement of privacy details, public funds, or some mysterious reason that has managed to stay hidden from the public, and that mystique has allowed you to rise in the ranks under the cloak of assumed incompetence without evidence. Man, that's so Mr. Magoo. He's always finding himself in one scrape or another. Crazy. Lest you think that the bias displays ended there, let me inform you, dear listener, they did not. The broadcasting watchdog has found the ABC breached impartiality guidelines in a Four Corners report about water rights buybacks in the Murrumbidgee Valley, by not including enough of the government's perspective, mostly because Susan Ley and bureaucrats from the relevant department had declined on-camera interviews and told producers that no one from the government would comment for the story. Which is a surprising display of forethought for a government whose approach to saving Australia from climate change-induced burning and drowning is to heavily invest in coal mines and gas. The July 2019 program looked at the federal government's water grants for farmers under the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. It examined whether the water grants were a colossal waste of taxpayer money and whether multi-million dollar subsidies had been secretly handed to big businesses. The ACMA said the program should have acknowledged in a meaningful way that aspects of the infrastructure scheme were contested and other views existed. I mean, I suppose this is the government equivalent of teaching creationism in a science class. Other views exist. Quite frankly, it's about time that the ABC was brought to task for its lack of informing people that other things exist, be they other ideas, philosophies, government parties who could run the country and fund the ABC, breakfast cereals, planets that we can live on after we destroy this one. Hang on, what's that? There isn't? I'm being told that there isn't any other planets that we can live on. Well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree on that one. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I hope that this year has seen you as well as it could, that you have managed to make it through, that things haven't gotten too bad. Do stay safe, do look after yourselves, wash your hands, socially distance when you can. Please wear your mask still. I know it's getting to that point where you're starting to feel like you don't need to, but please continue to wear your masks when you can and when you should. And come see my show in Adelaide. There's no virus there at the moment. Let's all go. But stay safe. And I'll see you in the new year. Bye-bye. Thank you.